Cornwallis, scarlet-clad and gold-laced, seated on horseback, also forms his troops into the line of battle. By the time both armies maneuver into position, it is nearly dawn. Thick fog blankets the field as the sky begins to lighten, making it difficult for the commanders to see the enemy's position. Gates sits astride his bay horse in a pale blue coat and velvet breeches, posted behind the militia. His staff thinks there is movement in the British line opposite them. An aide suggests that if the British aren't yet in position, the Americans should attack. Gates agrees and orders the militia forward. Seeing the militia move, Cornwallis believes the Americans are still adjusting their lines and also prepares to attack.
Observing a movement on the American left, I directed Lieutenant Colonel Webster to begin the attack, which was done with great vigor. Our line advanced in good order with the cool intrepidity of experienced British soldiers.
The determination with which the British advanced, firing and huzzaing, threw our military into such a panic that they threw down their weapons and ran.
Some of the militiamen are combat veterans, but most are not and have received little training. The sight of red-coated British soldiers advancing shoulder to shoulder with bayonets thrust forward is more terrifying than most of the soldiers can bear. William Gibson of the North Carolina Militia was one of the first to flee the field.
Everyone I saw was about to run as well. It was instantaneous. There was no effort to rally. Officers and men joined in the flight. I threw away my gun. Thinking I might be punished for it, I picked up a drum instead. But it made so much noise when touched by twigs that I cast it away.
Only one militia regiment, the North Carolinians, commanded by Colonel Henry Dixon, holds its ground. They occupy the center of the American line, next to the 2nd Maryland Brigade.